factor today, only at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Bryson DeChambeau, Max Homa, and Scottie Scheffler are tied for the lead at 6-under. Tiger Woods will also be teeing off today, this after making the Masters cut for a record 24th time. The NBA's regular season is winding down, and plenty of playoff positioning is still to be determined. No games today. The teams finish off the season tomorrow. In the West, the Nuggets, Timberwolves, and Thunder are tied atop the conference. T-Wolves coach Chris Finch is happy to still see his team having a chance at the top seed.
We still need some help, as I understand it. So the only way you get help is if you help yourself first, and then we'll see what happens. So either way, though, game 82, we're playing for a Western Conference. Chance to win the Western Conference has been a heck of a regular season.
And they do indeed need some help. Oklahoma City's in the driver's seat. All the Thunder need is a win tomorrow to be the one seed. To hockey and a busy Saturday on tap in a battle of playoff positioning. Three games on ABC and the ESPN app. 12:30 Eastern Islanders Rangers. 3 Eastern Stars and Kraken. 8 Eastern Penguins hosting the Bruins.
Hey, it's your resident Super Bowl champ, Chris Kennedy. Coming up Monday, I'll tell you the worst landing spot for all the top quarterback prospects in the NFL draft. It's on Sportsmanlike, 6 a.m. Eastern, right here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, and ESPNU.
The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for spending your Saturday mornings with us on Off to the Races. We are nearly set for the Kentucky Derby. And we'll go over who is in the Kentucky Derby. You heard the two standouts. There is a little group at the top, very small. It's a couple, Sierra Leone and Fearless. We'll talk about those two horses with Byron King here in about 15 minutes, an interview I just got off the clips with. Had this talk to Byron a little bit earlier this morning and than usual. Not a big fan of recorded interviews, but sometimes it's what you got to do and make the schedules work and to get the good content. We got some nice content from Byron King, and we'll go over the list of who is in the Kentucky Derby in about 20-25 minutes. We'll talk about where is the Preakness. Alan Foreman will join us to talk with Frank Vespi in the Living the Dream segment, and the after a lot of stagnant, didn't seem to be a whole lot of happening, all of a sudden there's a lot happening with the Preakness, and you'll want to hear about that. It is at Old Pimlico, at least this year and next year. A little update there, but it's going to be changing. Good Night Shirt. That's the name of a horse that I had the opportunity to speak to the owner. Goodnight Short, steeplechase horse, Foxfield. A nice event, about 30,035 showing up in Charlottesville here in about 2 weeks for the steeplechase racing. And they've added a race, the Goodnight Shirt race. Had a chance to speak with his owner, Harold Vye, and that is some content you will want to tune into. Just some interviews are just memorable, and to go out and interview Harold Vye last night at his residence and see all his memorabilia and his years of horse racing, ended up spending about an hour in there. I could have spent four talking about Goodnight Shirt and the trophies. We'll have a segment on that and speak with Foxfield's executive director, Kelsey Cox, as well. But let's go into the racing action. If today's race is the last race on the Kentucky Derby Trail, it is the Lexington Stakes, only a 20-point race, 20, 10, 6, 4 and 2 points, and they're critical points in the standings because right now it looks like you need to have 45 points. The last horse with points to get in would be No More Time. As the 19th horse, T.O. Password would get a special Japanese invite if he chooses to come. The first horse off the list is Grand Mo the First with 40 points. There are five horses trying to get that 20, that 10, just enough to put them over the line. Yeah, there'll be a few defections, but if you like betting just on name, here is the field for the Kentucky Derby as it sits here on April 13th. Sierra Leone, Fierceness, Catching Freedom, Stronghold, Resilience, Forever Young, that's the Japanese horse that won the Dubai Derby. Endlessly may or may not be in, we don't know yet. Timberlake will not be in. Doorknock, Danny Gargan, a guest on our show, will be in. Brad Cox, instead of the Todd Squad, will have the Cox Flocks this year with Brad Cox with at least three and maybe even four horses in the Derby. No other trainer, I think, has more than one. Track Phantom, Steve Asmussen, previous guest on the show. West Saratoga, Jess Steele, Dwayne Lucas may have a horse in the Derby. Watch out for that. Honor Marie, Domestic Product, Catalytic, Deterministic, Society Man, Mystic Dan, and as I mentioned, No More Time, Ken McPeak with Mystic Dan there, who was on the show last week. So that's the way the Derby stands right now. T.O. Password would be the special Japanese interest. If he doesn't come, that might free up another spot for Grand Mo the First, Common Defense, Epic Ride, Uncle Henry, and maybe Hades, who is running today in that race. Let's go back to last week and take a look, do our recaps, because it was a heavy, heavy week of racing. And we start out with the Wood, which had a field of, it looks like 12, 13 perhaps. Yeah, 13. I'm trying to count them down the list here on the Equibase chart here. And Deterministic was getting a lot of attention. Joel Rosario was the favorite in the race. And Uncle Heavy was in the race, as I mentioned. Society Man, a horse that's already in the Derby, it looks like, was in this group as well. Let's listen to the call of the Wood.
They're all making a charge for the lead. Lonesome Boy will have the lead here with Resilience, and now Resilience presses on, and Resilience is quickly up by two, three widening lengths. Society Man is in the clear. Oh, we had a spill there. Deposition clipped heels and went down. It was Resilience who's opening up, is up by two and a half, three lengths. Society Man down towards the inside. Protective. Resilience is drifting out. It's Resilience who's clear, is up by three lengths now. Resilience will win the Woods.
Resilience gets the win, and William Mott, the winning trainer there, John Velasquez, you did hear the clip about the spill in the race. Nothing substantial in terms of injuries is related to that. That was good to hear. At least that was the initial report. So, yeah, Bill Mott gets Resilience into the race. Bill Mott has a horse in the Derby, so a lot to be excited about there with that horse, and yeah, paid $11 for the win there. So that was the third choice of Resilience. Actually worked out for me well on with that result. The next feature, we had three huge races. These were 100-point races, 4 weeks in front of the Derby, as you might expect. You would see that. 10 horses going to the gate in the Toyota Bluegrass Stakes. The favorite was Sierra Leone.
Just over a quarter mile to go. Top Connor is the leader. Epic Ride swings wide. Just a touch between horses. Doorknock has to shift lanes along with Sierra Leone. That pair out in the center of the track, still five lengths off the lead as they move by the eighth pole. Just a touch has taken the lead from Top Connor. Sierra Leone is running on from the outside. A 16th to go. Sierra Leone comes forward for the lead and deep stretch, and wins the Toyota Bluegrass for Tyler Gaffalione.
Sierra Leone had quite a trip in the Bluegrass Stakes, starting with before he even got in the starting gate. Took a little while to load him, and he was sort of shifting all around in the stretch there. So wonder how that's going to play out in Louisville here in 3 weeks. But congratulations to those connections. Chad Brown getting the win there. Tyler Gaffleon, as you heard Nicole, getting the win as well. The favorite, and rightly so, him and Fierceness, who won the Florida Derby, you heard in the opening. Those are the two big horses. Out west in the Santa Anita Derby, there was a field of eight going to the gate. We had John White talk about this race last week and sort of settled on Stronghold as a horse. That was my pick in the race. Imagination, Frankie Dettori. Holy cow, he was winning everything. He even won with a horse called Ball Don't Lie in the second race. I was a basketball fan. I just love seeing that horse win. But let's hear the call of the Santa Anita Derby, a major Derby prep.
Imagination making his move past the quarter pole. EJ won the cup, running a good race on the outside. Tapelo is down at the rail. And Stronghold won from the outside. A driving finish. Stronghold bursts through between horses and is up to take the lead at the furlong pole. Imagination trying to match strides with him. And EJ won the cup in third. It's Imagination and Stronghold. Nose and nose in the Santa Anita Derby. Stronghold just in front. And Stronghold prevails under Antonio Frasu, who's jubilant, understandably, in this great moment, defeating Imagination.
Nice win there by Stronghold, and Phil D'Amato, the winning trainer there, and just second choice in the race. Love seeing that result as well. Stronghold punches his ticket for Louisville as well. So field is really shaping up nice for the Kentucky Derby. Lexington will wrap it up today. We'll know all the Derby points by then. We just don't know about, it happens in horse racing. It's a little issues come up, little fever spikes, you name it, will cause a horse or two to defect. If they're not ready on the first Saturday in May, they don't run in the Derby, and it's a shame when it happens. It's heartbreaking for the connections of the horse when they can't run for whatever reason, but it's the opportunity. That's what happens when you have like that big race at the only time. There'll be plenty of other opportunities for these horses to win big races, but it's nothing like winning the Derby. Gonna reach out here to Shenandoah, where they had their opening week, coming off a nice opening weekend there, and finally, it looks like the weather might be a little windy up in the valley, but the weather's going to cooperate temperature-wise and precipitation-wise. This week, is they even have like cupcakes up there. Darrell Wood, who now joins us on Off to the Races. Let's get the bumper music if we hadn't played that. That's how we know it's Darrell Wood. He is the Exacta boxer. Is that your bet of choice?
Another big segue. Yeah, the dollar Exacta box, I think. Yeah, that's probably the bet of choice. Good value. Not much money. Well,
hey, I know you were a little frosty up there last weekend, but things a lot different this weekend. Tell us, I've already had like interest. I'm running some of the ads locally here in Charlottesville and Waynesboro and Harrisonburg. It seems to be getting a good response, especially for the Corgi races.
Yeah, Nick, Corgi races tomorrow are spring staple, it appears to be. But yeah, we're pretty pretty blustery here today. We're expecting gusts of up to 40 miles an hour, so hoping that all goes well. Tomorrow the weather looks a lot better, though, 82 degrees and sunny. But this is weekend number two. Like you said, got off to a really good start last weekend, good crowds, good betting. We got a few more races this weekend. We're up to 10 races today and 11 tomorrow. And we roll through May 19th, so lots of opportunities for fans to come up and see us here in Woodstock, Virginia.
Yeah, what's the action been like with the just the horsemen and free admission, the crowds. I want to see that English Bulldog race. That's a brainchild of mine. I want to see the JMU Duke Dogs going at it. Maybe get that on the schedule for the fall or maybe next spring. But, you know, what's the atmosphere been like? How was opening weekend and how's everything moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, if you like cold, blustery weather, opening weekend was your cup of tea. We actually had a really good crowd on Saturday. We had some folks from JMU, the fraternities here, loud and vibrant and cheering their horses on. So it's really a good setting because you get people of all ages. It's not the same demographic. You get college kids, families, seniors, and everyone's here for the same reason: not to bet simulcast races, not to enjoy a meal in a corporate suite, but just to sit in a 100-plus-year-old grandstand, literally on top of the action and cheering horses on. So that's what we're here for. We've got 14 weeks total this year, again, 7 in spring, and we're back in fall for another 7 weeks. But want to remind fans, they can bet us online on TVG, TwinSpires, ExpressBet, Naira Bets. We've got free programs and tip sheets up at ShenandoahDance.com. You can watch the streaming of our races live on the website, too. So we try to make it as user-friendly as possible for the simulcast players.
I think the apron at Shenandoah is maybe 3 feet, where at Colonial it's probably like 203 feet.
Totally
there, but it is cool. When you see it in the grandstand, though, it is. I mean, you're absolutely right. You're on top of it.
Yeah, I like the old sports stadiums before the modern era always had the seats going high, where no matter where you were on top of the action, and that's still kind of the way our grandstand is. So you are, I know the people that are trackside in one of our viewing decks can literally high-five the driver of the 8-hole as the race comes to start. That's how close you are. So very different experience here.
It really is. Shenandoah, don't miss it. Make plans. Saturday, Sunday racing, 105. And Daryl, we'll let you bundle up a little bit there today. And 82 sounds a lot better for tomorrow.
It does. Thank you, Nick.
Great. Daryl Wood joining us on Off to the Races this morning. And have a great day. Daryl Wood, he's probably looking for a cup of hot coffee or something right about now. Want to take a look here. Mentioned at the opening of the show, Byron King, the news editor for the Blood Horse, joining us on Off to the Races. Had just spoke to him less than an hour ago about the Kentucky Derby field and the Lexington Stakes today. Fierceness, Sierra Leone are those top two horses. Here's what Byron had to say about those two and how they may have separated themselves from everybody else.
I think there is. I think these two have clearly distinguished themselves on another level relative to the other horses that have been campaigned in the United States, at least. I think the wild card is Forever Young, who is a Japanese horse who won its very first 3 races there before traveling to the Middle East and winning 2 lucrative races over there, the Saudi Derby and the UAE Derby. Those are races. The UAE Derby is a race that's been pretty much a negative key race in the Kentucky Derby with 19 starters and none of them hitting the board. But that stat aside, Forever Young hasn't done anything wrong. He's run some fast times. He's looked like a horse that would like 1.25 miles. So he's the hard horse to evaluate because we don't have as many direct comparisons. We have a few American horses that ran against him overseas, but not the very cream of the crop. So he's the tricky evaluation, but definitely, Nick, I'd say among the U.S. horses, Fierceness and Sierra Leone are at the head of the class.
What do you make of this year's Derby group? It's got a little bit of everything in it. Dwayne Lucas is back. It's kind of spread out. No real, you don't really see like the Todd squad. Todd Pletcher starts 3, 4, 5 in the Derby. Don't really see that this year. How does this sort of shake up compared to previous years, and who might be some other horses to look at?
Well, obviously the big difference this year, as well as it has been last few years, is no Bob Baffert, who remains banned by Churchill Downs after the post-race positive test from Medina Spirit back in 2021. He's contesting that in the court. Actually, I should say his owner is, Amar Zidane. So we'll see if anything shakes out there. I doubt it will. So that's a difference compared to, you know, from so many years when Baffert would regularly bring the leading contender or the winner. So that's different, but not over the last few. I'd say this year is, you're right, there's a lot of these horses that are certainly warrant running, but at the same time, they're not particularly flashy in terms of racking up the wins. I mean, you mentioned D. Wayne Lucas is back. He has a horse named Just Steel, who ran second in the Arkansas Derby and ran a really nice race in there behind a Baffert horse named Muth, who is likely to go on to the Preakness. But at the same time, he's running four preps this year, and he hasn't done better than second in any of them. So they all have a little bit of improving to do, but that can happen in a race like the Kentucky Derby. That's one of the things that makes this race so compelling is they're in such a developmental part of their cycle as spring three-year-olds. It's kind of the equivalent to humans of being you know, late teenagers, and you just see a lot of improvement from athletes at that age, whether they're human or equine.
You look at the point standings here, and 45 is the lowest number on the leaderboard at the moment. That's pretty high number. Is that because of the adjustment? Or has there just been a lot of sustainability with a lot of these horses? And it's big race today at Keeneland, where Hades is going to try and click on the positive side of that line, maybe find his way in. And some of that relies on T.O. Password, the Japanese invitation that sits. Where does it sit sort of at the bottom of the list in the scramble to get in?
Well, you nailed it right there. But at the same time, what I've seen through the years is there's always defections. There are horses that will be scratched. There are horses that, last year, for example, Forte bruising a foot and ultimately being scratched. Pardon me. But then, you know, other horses, especially now, you know, these horses are under a microscope to make sure that their health is perfectly good leading up to a race like the Kentucky Derby. So I think we'll end up, if I had to forecast it, I would say that horses with points in the 30s will end up making it. But we'll see. As you mentioned, some of it has been affected by international interest. So in this case, if we have the UAE Derby Forever Young coming, who, of course, originated in Japan, as well as a Japanese representative that's come through that series, that takes up two spots. And then, as you mentioned, the points have been tinkered with through the years, so they are now, I think, awarding points through fifth place, when in years past it might have been just a fourth place. So that allows people to, you know, have a little bit more points. And of course, for your listeners that aren't as familiar with the Derby point situation, it's more of a promotional tool and as a means to just determine who makes the race. So in other words, if a horse is on top with the most points, the, you know, Sierra Leones and the Fiercenesses of the world, they don't have any advantage from that standpoint when they load in the gate. It's just deciding if there's, for example, 23 horses that want to run, who are the 20 that get to go? They base it on the points.
Brad Cox does have three horses in the Derby so far. He could pick up another one with Encino today in the Lexington Stakes. There are, I think I'm trying to count this right, five horses trying to get that. The smallest points awarded is the last race, but they're going to be scrambling for them between the Wine Stewart here for Michael Maker, Hades, for Joe Orsino, Liberal Arts with Robert Medina, Lucky Jeremy with William Morey, and we mentioned Encino. So that's going to be quite a scramble today, a mile and a 16th. The Lexington Stakes a little bit different than it used to be. It used to be 2 weeks before the Derby, like when Charismatic won it for D. Wayne Lucas back in our first year in 99. how do you see the Lexington shaking out? Who gets to be the spoiler?
Well, I think for some of these horses, I'd be surprised if they're thinking the Kentucky Derby. There are some who certainly are. I think Hades is a good example of one that they clearly want to get the points in, and he looked like he would not make it otherwise, picking up some here. But some of the others, for example, Encino, who's the horse I actually like in Lexington today, they had him entered in the Bluegrass Stakes last week, and they scratched out to run here, which is, Lexington is typically an easier field. Obviously, there's no Sierra Leone in there. There's no Just a Touch. There's, you know, just it's a lesser group. But the horse that he just beat in the in his race at Turfway, the John Battaglia, was a horse named Epic Ride, who ran third in the Bluegrass, finished in front of Dorna. So not a bad horse at all. And this is a horse that's bred for dirt, but he would be pretty borderline on points even if he were to win today. I think, I'm not staring at the points total in front of me, but I think he's got 20, so I think he would have 40, which wouldn't assure him of being in the race. But I think just the fact that Brad Cox is typically a guy that likes to give his horses a month plus of rest, I kind of view that the fact that he opted to scratch out of the Bluegrass and look at the Lexington more as, hey, maybe I'll look at races other than the Derby with this horse. But I could be wrong, and also there is that thing called Derby fever that can happen. And maybe he runs off and wins by a huge margin, and they say, hey, let's go on to the Kentucky Derby. There's been horses in this race, as you mentioned, through the years that were kind of in that situation. I mean, I don't think anyone viewed Charismatic as the likely Derby winner when he was running in the Lexington that year, and he just got really sharp at that time of year, and he had a nice win, and of course went back and then replicated it at Churchill Downs a couple weeks later. So it'll be interesting to watch. It's a beautiful day here in Kentucky, and after a rain throughout the week, and we should have a fast track for the Lexington.
Yeah, Charismatic, not only did no one expect him to win the Derby, they didn't even expect him to win the Preakness after he won the Derby, going off at 8-1. This year we may have the Cox Flocks instead of the Todd Squad if Encino gets in the 8 horse in the 10th race at Keeneland today, the Lexington Stakes. So sitting here on April 13th, if you had to make a Derby pick right now, a future wager, if you will, that just wrapped up last week, who would you make it on?
Well, that's a tricky question. To be honest with you, I don't mean to not answer it, but what I think people sometimes make a mistake with in the Kentucky Derby is they will make their pick weeks out, you know, which is unlike any other way that they make their pick for any other gambling day, right? I mean, we usually get our past performances out and we, you know, scrutinize the PPs and determine the race shape and all these kinds of things, which is really hard to do in your head when you're doing it 3 weeks out, right? So I don't mean to punt on it. I will tell you, though, that I think that Fierceness is Best is better than anybody's. And I think when he runs to his potential, as he did in the Florida Derby, when he wins by 13 and a half lengths, a record, or in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, when he won off in very fast time, I don't think anybody else is near quick enough to keep up with him. The big question is he's had this pattern of alternating wins with subpar races. So he broke his maiden, then he loses the Champagne, then he bounces back and wins the Breeders' Cup, then he loses the Holy Bull, and then he bounces back and wins the Florida Derby. So which Fierceness are we going to see? And then in Sierra Leone's case, you have a very talented horse, one that costs $2.3 million at auction and has run incredibly well this year, but comes from the clouds, and that's a lot of horses and a lot of traffic in the Kentucky Derby. So you could take those two out of the mix, and then if maybe Forever Young continues his continues the UAE Derby struggles, well, now you've got the potential for some blow-up prices, right? So I think all of us better have on our handicapping hats and really scrutinize these past performances when they draw the race, and we can kind of see the makeup. And this year, they're going to draw the race a week out from the Kentucky Derby, and so there'll be plenty of time to handicap.
We love that in the radio business, the ultimate tease. Stay tuned, everybody. Thanks, Byron, for joining us on Off to the Races this morning, and we'll let you head out to haircuts and hikes.
You know me too well, man. Know me too well. Thank you, Nick.
Byron King joining us on Off to the Races. Now, avid hiker. So on the other side, we'll have Frank Vespi. Alan Foreman will settle out the Preakness future. It has a future. It has a great future, perhaps. You'll hear that on the other side. Grandpa Jones takes us in the break. We're 8 miles from Louisville, and we're here live on Off to the Races, powered by theracingbiz.com. Stay tuned.
Horses are at the gate and ready for action this spring at Shenandoah Downs in Woodstock. A big 7-week season of harness horse racing continues every Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock through May 19th. This weekend, enter the Own a Horse for a Day contest and win your share of over $5,000. Plus Sunday, April 14th, enjoy corgi dog races on the track along with $1 hot dogs and $2 canned beer. Watch, wager, and win every weekend. Parking and admission are free, and details are at shenandoahdowns.com.
Nothing compares to a horse. They inspire greatness, command respect. Because Virginia's horse industry isn't just racing and farming. It's built on the skills, labors, and passions of dedicated people working in every industry throughout our state. Horses fuel the economy, create jobs, support thousands of families, and even make dreams come true. Virginia's economy wins with horses. Find out more at virginiahorseracing.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Frank Vespi here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Thanks for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. We just had Nick and Byron King talking Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown, and still lots to do here on Off to the Races. And wanted to change gears a little bit here for a minute. We earlier this week, HB 1524 passed the Maryland General Assembly, and you're saying, why the heck is he talking about bill numbers and General Assemblies? And the reason is because that bill, known as the Pimlico Plus Bill, is going to lead to a pretty dramatic overhaul of Maryland racing. Here to help us make sense of it, going to be Alan Foreman. He's general counsel of the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association and the MTHA's representative on the Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority, MTROA. That's easy for me to say. The MTROA, now kind of the big cheese in Maryland racing. Alan, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races.
Sure, Frank. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you making a little bit of a Saturday, a little bit of time on a Saturday for us. Let's start with this. Just let's fly at 30,000 feet for a minute. What is this bill going to do?
Well, you know, you've been and we've been talking about this whole concept for Maryland racing for almost 5 years now. And there was a concept plan that led to legislation that passed 4 years ago that was going to consolidate Maryland racing at a new racetrack at Laurel, Pimlico, to be redeveloped, but to be used only for a brief Preakness meet, and that Maryland racing would look completely different. That plan, as we now know 4 years later, stalled for any number of reasons. And so we went back to the drawing boards, and it was made very clear to us by leadership in Annapolis that time was running out on whether or not the state was going to continue to support a redevelopment plan for the thoroughbred industry. And so the authority was created after much study. It was created a year ago. The authority was mandated to come up with a plan that would hopefully work for Maryland racing, that would allow for new facilities, that would allow for the $375 million that had been authorized for bonds that would finance construction of the project to go forward, and also a mandate from the General Assembly to look at new future operating models, because the sense was the status quo was no longer going to fly, and that they were looking for a new direction for Maryland Racing than what we've been experiencing for the past decade. And so the authority in late December recommended what you just referred to as the Pimlico Plus plan. Laurel is too expensive to redo. It needs to be scraped. It's even in worse shape than Pimlico. The Preakness has to stay in Baltimore. Pimlico needs to get done. And so with the available monies, the authority, after a great study, determined that the best plan for Maryland Racing was to consolidate racing at Pimlico, not at Laurel. We cannot afford two facilities. With support from the construction of a state-of-the-art training center, and that for purposes of the future operating model, that racing transition from private ownership to a not-for-profit similar to the way that NYRA and Del Mar are operated, and that the not-for-profit would operate Maryland Racing going forward. The Stadium Authority would continue to oversee the construction and this project, which they had been doing. It required cleanup legislation from the legislation in 2020, also to allow for the creation of the not-for-profit. But it also required, before we could move forward in Annapolis, agreements with the Stronach Group to transfer racing from private ownership to the center of the authority, creating this new not-for-profit, and then very complicated negotiations regarding the Preakness, which the Stronachs own, and how the state could get control of the Preakness. That was all wrapped up into six agreements that were signed between the Stronach Group and the state of Maryland, and then this legislation, House Bill 1524, which now authorizes the project to go forward, and that's what is now going to happen.
All right, so we're going to end up with racing at Pimlico, the closure of Laurel, the creation of a new training center, and the replacement of our sort of traditional private for-profit model of racetrack ownership with a nonprofit managed model under state ownership. You referenced, you know, that we've been talking about this for a long time. I think probably 4 years ago, probably almost to the day, I probably yes. had you on this show to talk about the passage of the Racing and Community Development Act, which was supposedly going to be the solution to the long-term problems with Pimlico in particular. Why is this time different, Alan?
Because all of the impediments that prevented the plan in 2020 from going forward have been overcome. The problems with the original plan were still. Sorry?
I think we lost you there for a second.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, sir. So the impediments that prevented the 2020 plan from going forward have been cleared. There are no impediments. The impediments at that time were the need to construct two facilities, the need to consolidate at Laurel, but the cost to do Laurel was estimated to be double what we projected when we did the concept plan. There was a tax issue with respect to Laurel and improvements at Laurel that would have taxed the Belinda Stronach at capital gains rates at a cost that was just not something that she was even willing to consider. And then we ran into all kinds of delays with COVID, interest rate changes based on what had happened with the economy. It was just one problem after another, difficulty of the Stronach Group negotiating agreements with Baltimore City. So we had to go back to the drawing board to realize that we couldn't consolidate at Laurel because the Preakness has to stay at Pimlico, which meant that Pimlico drove this whole project. That Pimlico is not big enough to accommodate the industry as Laurel could have done. So while Pimlico becomes the hub of Maryland Racing, we needed to construct or need to construct a training facility, and we've spent the better part of 2 years scouring the state landscape for appropriate property in which to construct the training center. estimating the cost of the project and knowing that we would have sufficient funds to do both Pimlico and a training center, and the move to this not-for-profit model, which gets us away from paying subsidies to a private company and all the things that were really forcing Maryland into what I would best describe as status quo. So all of those impediments have been removed, and there really are no hurdles to overcome now. It's just the real grunt work starts as soon as the governor signs the bill and the Board of Public Works approves the agreements that have been signed.
And that grunt work, I assume, is, among other things, creating this nonprofit and kind of ironing out what that relationship is going to be and who's going to be a part of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've looked at that for quite some time, and the work has already begun, and that work will be ongoing. The not-for-profit, under the agreements, will take control of Maryland Racing on January 1, 2025. We will be at Laurel for what is estimated to be 3 years. The Stadium Authority estimates that they can complete the project within 3 years from January 1, 2025. And under the agreements with the Strana Group, Maryland Racing will continue under the auspices of the new not-for-profit beginning January 1, 2025, and it's rent-free. We certainly will pick up all the expenses of conducting racing at Laurel, but we will be at Laurel for 3 years with one exception, and that is the 2025 Preakness, as now planned, will be at Pimlico. That was a demand from the Park Heights community, and the governor wanted it at Pimlico. Also, it's the 150th anniversary of the Preakness. Notwithstanding that Pimlico may be partially under construction during that time, it's anticipated the work could start at Pimlico late this year, early in 2025, and there will have been work done at Pimlico when the 2025 Preakness is conducted there. And so we will run the Preakness at Laurel in 2026 because Pimlico will be under full construction. And it's currently anticipated that the 2027 Preakness will be conducted at Pimlico, either with a completed facility or nearing completion. Not terribly different from what's going on at Belmont right now because Belmont's undergoing a similar renovation.
I have to chuckle just a little because it's like, what's better than Pimlico? Pimlico under construction. last question, and I'll let you go. We're talking with Alan Foreman of the Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority. Alan, why was it so important to you guys to move away from this private ownership model to this state-owned, nonprofit-managed model?
Well, I think you can see that not only here but elsewhere. Without the ability to support our facilities and our program with gaming revenues, yes, we do get a portion of gaming revenues for the purse dedication account. The track gets a much smaller amount. And having to operate two facilities, the private ownership would either want to severely reduce live racing days in order to turn a profit, and you saw the Stronach proposal before the authority was to reduce Maryland Racing to two boutique meets, 80 live racing days, and increase purses, which would move to squeeze out a number of the trainers who supported the program here for years. The mid-level trainers would probably invite the larger outfits into Maryland. And that was simply a model that was not sustainable. We're currently paying in excess of $11 million a year from the purse account to support the operations at Laurel and Pimlico. We would be better pouring that money into our own operations as a not-for-profit. NYRA is very successful right now. Del Mar is very successful, and we are copying that model. We also believe that we can turn the Preakness, which was once a profit center and now is losing money, back into a private, an operation that we can be proud of, that we can generate revenue that will help to support the program on a year-round basis. The simple fact is we get to control our own destiny, and we're not at the mercy of a private operator who can pretty much dictate what circumstances will be here. And political support for the industry was fading under the private ownership model.
All right. So as Chairman Greg Cross likes to call it, a bet on ourselves model. A lot more to talk about going forward. It's going to be a very interesting couple of years in Maryland. Alan Forman, thanks for joining me and helping us to make sense of all this.
My pleasure, Frank. Anytime.
All right, that was Alan Forman. Let us change gears quickly before we kick it back to Nick. Bring in Callie Francois, Maryland Jockey Club analyst, to talk about some stakes on tap today at Laurel. Callie, we got you?
Yeah, we do, Frank. And might I just say, just a big pat on the back for Alan Forman for all of the work that he's been doing over the years to make this project happen. It's a very exciting historical time for Maryland racing.
Let us keep our fingers crossed that we continue to say that in a couple of years. It's they got a lot of work still to do, but hopefully the future is so bright we got to wear shades.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, sure. I'm channeling my 80s music. All right, Callie, let's talk. We got three stakes to sort of end of the card, 8, 9, 10.
Four.
Let's just quickly kind of run through them. Kind of some interesting horses here. Disco Ebo, Coastal Mission. We got the mile and an eighth race, the Native Dancer, where we got Shaft's Bullet at Sizzling Time. Quickly, horses that you're looking forward to seeing.
Okay, so let's work actually a little bit backwards. In race number 10 in the Native Dancer, it's pretty easy. I think Shaft's Bullet, now that Gary has this horse on, the right program, headed in the right direction, bar none, he's the horse to beat in this race. I actually go with Be Better Underneath. That horse is also gearing up for this specific distance, I think. So I go 3-5-2-6 in the Native Dancer. And then we just press a little bit backwards to the Frank Whiteley. I go with Swift Shore. I try and look for a little bit of value in that race. Horacio DePaz just having a nice win yesterday as well.
He's on fire. DePaz can't lose. Yes. I like the whole story of it. Sizzling Time is a lot of fun. Sort of on the bottom of your ticket, but $1,000 yearling who's made like $300,000 and won a stake is pretty cool. What about the eighth race, the Premonetta? You gonna just live with Can't Hurry Love? Or you gonna try and beat that one?
No, I'm actually Can't Hurry Love is actually a scratch.
Oh. Well, then you're definitely going to beat her. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love the way Michael Sanchez has been riding Center Court Champ. So that's I'm going with that angle. But the race actually kind of opens wide up for Disco Ebo without the New York shipping kind of potentially hounding down her neck. I mean, it really does open things wide up for Disco Ebo. So I would honestly just exacto with those two. It does leave this down to a four-horse field. So I go, I'm still in between 5 and 3 with 15 minutes to go to the morning show, but then I go 4 and 2, of course, there in the Premonetta. But then did you also want to talk about the fourth race, and that is the Heavenly Cause?
If you can quickly tell me something useful about it, then I want to hear it because I need all the help I can get.
So we've got Intrepid Dream for Gary Capuano, who's coming off of that wonderful win. Too Many Kisses stretches back out from the 7 furlongs to the mile for Tim Keith with Forrest Boyce. They narrowly missed out in their last opportunity to go this one-turn mile distance. So 9-2, again, a smaller field of 5 horses with a scratch of the number 5, Pistol of Asbin. I go with the Joe Sharp horse in third. He's pretty okay with gauging whether these horses want to stretch out. There's not a ton of breeding behind that one turn mile. But the speed factor, you have to go. And then, of course, Cats in the Timber wrapping things up for Brittany and Sheldon Russell there in the Heavenly Cause.
All right, Intrepid Dream, one of the coolest streaks of all time. This horse has won 4 consecutive races. Nothing amazing about that, although it's difficult. 4 races over the course of 4 calendar years. The horse won the first one in 21, then 2 in 22, missed 23 altogether, comes back, wins again in 24, tries to make it 5 straight here in today's Heavenly Cause, 7-5 morning line, Toledo up for Gary Kapp. Callie Francois, thank you for being patient, and thank you for joining me here on Off to the Races.
And there we go, Off to the Races, a wonderful 4 stakes day with some nice allowances in between, Frank.
Yeah, no, it should be a fun day. We're looking forward to it, and I'm sure I will see you in the winner's circle.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm counting on it.
All right, that was Callie Francois, Maryland Jockey Club analyst. I let the trains run a little bit over. My apologies, Nick Hahn, but I think we're not too bad here.
Yeah, lots of Maryland racing underway. And you know what you do with Maryland thoroughbreds that just don't quite cut it on the flat tracks?
You send them over jumps, and you're going to talk to Sonny Vi about that.
Good night shirt. Maryland bred kind of okay, you know, on the track, but boy, did he turn out to be some kind of steeplechase horse. Yeah, great job, Frank Allen Foreman. It's great to hear that Maryland is on the path towards a future success in the Preakness. Frank, great job there. Yeah, wanted to this segment here talk about Goodnight Shirt as I drop my phone. Goodnight Shirt here is the is going to have a special race named after him at Foxfield. I had a chance to talk with his owner. There are a couple horses that just sort of interviews you do that are memorable. And when I met with Harold Sonny Vi yesterday afternoon at his place out in the Free Union here in Virginia, actually down the road from me here in Charlottesville, I knew it would be like a real special interview. And it turned out to be his house is almost like a museum to Goodnight Shirt. And I had a chance to talk to the 93-year-old Navy veteran, the former owner of Goodnight Shirt, and he's looking forward to a big day at Foxfield here in about 2 weeks. I asked him about what it was like. Goodnight Shirt, this is a horse that came out of Maryland, actually raced at Colonial Downs on the flats. He basically was purchased from River D, who are the Clancys, and they actually put an ad out saying, "You better buy this horse or you'll be chasing him," was a famous ad that they ran. Well, they sell this horse, and they probably have a little bit of lament about selling this horse because he just became a superstar over the jumps. I asked Harold Sonny Vi last night about what it was like to own a 2 times Eclipse Award winner.
Well, that is the horse of the year. In this case, he was the steeple. You know, they have Eclipse Awards for steeplechase horses as well as flat horses. And in 2008, he only raced in 5 races, all Grade 1 stakes races. He won all 5 of them. And that's a record. I don't know that anybody else will ever come up and knock that one down. But that's doable, of course. Anything happens, he did it. But that was quite a few years ago, and nobody's come close to doing it. And the Iroquois was done in 1941, and started first race in 1941, and nobody's won that 3 times. And he won it twice, and we fully expected him to be the one to win it the first time, 3 times. And Willie, it rained 12 inches the night before that race. And we told Willie, said, "Willie, stay on the high ground. Stay on the high ground." He went straight to the rail, ankle deep. I said, "What, Willie, what is it you don't understand about high ground?"
Telling the jockey there, but yeah, did win the Iroquois twice for trainer Jack Fisher. And so I asked him about, when did he get this horse at the right time? This is what Harold Vai had to say.
We bought him as a three-year-old, so he was just learning to, as he was three and four and five. He won that stake down at Colonial Downs at, when he was 5 years old. That was his first light to come on, you know, and bring attention to his what he was doing. And then he hauls off and goes to Nashville and wins the Iroquois. The two other champions, he beat both of them in that same race. He led the whole race, and they tried to run him down, but he ran away from him. He won by something like 4.5 lengths.
Yeah, I mean, this is a horse that started off even slowly on the jumps, but really picked up steam, started winning a lot of races late in his career. Asked Sonny Vai, what kind of horse was, what was the temperament of Goodnight Shirt?
Yes, when he was so relaxed, he'd just go to the paddock and get under saddle, and the jockey gets on, and they mope around a little bit until they tell him to go on to the track. And invariably, he would just stand there and, on three legs, resting one at a time. Always the back. They didn't switch off the front ones. Along that same line, that people would ask Jack Fisher, our trainer, what's it like? What's it like? What was it like to train a horse like Goodnight Shark? He said, perfect. Not a minute's trouble ever. Just perfect horse. In the stall, out of the stall, on the track, anywhere.
Yeah, Goodnight Shirt, who was a horse that got his jumping career launched in the Zeke Ferguson, basically, at Colonial Downs. That's when his winning ways really started to set off his career. Last question I asked him was what it was like to get the recognition for Goodnight Shirt, especially here in Charlottesville at Foxfield, coming up here in the next 2 weeks. Here's what Sonny had to say.
It's kind of a really neat thing because What they're recognizing is they recognize this horse that was owned and campaigned by a resident born and raised in Albemarle County, have a history of associating with the race course itself. My father, that used to be an airfield. That hangar is still there. And my father used to go out there when I was a child and go up with the pilots and fly around town and all that. My mother told him never to take me with him. He would take me. I would have to sit in the car while he was flying around at what is now Foxfield.
Do you ever go up? Or your mother wouldn't let you go up? Or did
my mother says, never get on a motorcycle or a tricycle. I mean, a motor vehicle with two wheels and all that stuff. So she was very protective.
But you rode horses. I mean,
I don't know how she overlooked that.
Fortunately, she gave him that exception. So, located between in Charlottesville, we have listeners in Harrisonburg and Richmond, of course. So maybe not that hangar, of course, is so iconic. Foxfield sets up to have a big day here, and Sonny Vai has a horse Welshman running in the Goodnight Shirt race on that day. Goodnight Shirt, he showed me the car that he bought last week, last night, and yeah, he bought an Audi that he has Goodnight Shirt as a vanity plate on the car. He told me that the horse paid for the car. He ought to at least put the license plate on it. Want to thank everybody who was on Off to the Races this morning. It's was a full show. We had Kelly Francois, Alan Foreman, Byron King, Darryl Wood joining us as well, and we'll have more about the Derby and Foxfield on upcoming shows. The Triple Crown's upon us. Thanks for listening. Tune us in next week on Off to the Races. We'll have post time at 10 o'clock.